I've got to level with you here. We've had all kinds of new stuff drop with this Ether Kickstarter and all the manuscript previews, and there's so much cool stuff coming out to look at, but I have been completely engrossed with this Midjourney AI thing. I don't know if you guys have ever played around with this thing before, but there is an artificial intelligence deep learning thing that you can get involved in that where you just give it a prompt and it will draw whatever the heck you want, and I tell you, it is like crack using this thing. It literally can create stuff from the depths of your own dreams and imaginations just by simply putting words into it. I feel like a GOG using this as an apparatus to bend the ether to my will. Seriously, it is that cool. So I have been doing that so much. We're having all these new things coming out to read with ether, but I've been absorbed by my apparatus. I can't help it. Anyway, welcome back everybody to Trinity Continuum Airwaves. My name is Corey Reynolds. I am your host, and this is a podcast all about the Trinity Continuum. And we are certainly still in the final days now of the Ether Kickstarter. We're in, I think, the last week of this thing. It's been going pretty good. We're at somewhere around $46,000, $47,000. We're getting close to unlocking that VTT tokens pack, and then hopefully can get all the way to the $50,000 goal and unlock that Ethernaut Collection 3. So looking forward to that. But I've been reading through, as promised, the Ether Gifts and that whole chapter, and I have just been blown away by the things that we find in there. There's so many neat powers here. In fact, I mean, well, first of all, let me just get to some of the cool stuff at the beginning of this chapter that I think are pretty dang cool. First of all, there is a very neat, very exhaustive, is that the right word? A very involved system of how a squire could potentially become a Gog or Magog, or how a Gog could become a Magog, and then the redemption arcs to bring them back to where they started from. And actually, all of that information is very, very cool. It presents some very fleshed out systems for having this sort of character arc where you change from one thing to another. Maybe you're bitten by a werewolf and you become a werewolf, but then you want to become a human again. There is a very involved process for how you go from one to the other. And actually, it's super cool. It's very generous. I use the word generous. Maybe that's not the right word, but it keeps a level of balance of abilities as you change from one thing to another. And it also happens relatively quickly. Like, let's say, for instance, you are a squire with many squire abilities and you get bitten by the werewolf or the vampire and you start to turn into one of those Magogs. And as you do, you begin losing access to your squire gifts, but you begin picking up Magog gifts. And these happen at a rate of about once per scene. And so that's actually pretty quick throughout a game. You know, sometimes you'd think something like this might take sessions or whatever, but you start to see this change pretty quickly, which is kind of exciting for the character to be able to be learning new abilities and having new powers and things like that unlocked for them. But then the process of rolling that back and being redeemed and getting back to a more human level, that's also a very intricate process. I feel like it's right in line with everything we would expect from such a thing from the story path rule set. It just feels very natural the way they've done it, by setting up a number of milestones equal to your deviations if you've become a Magog, and then giving you ways to research these things to give yourself enhancements to make the rolls for the milestone to be able to start working backwards, and then what happens if you fail those things. It's all very cool. It's a very neat system, and to me, as I read that, I'm not reading arcane game mechanics of trying to do something that is rare. What I'm seeing in those rules there, I'm seeing a story played out, a very character-focused, character-driven story. It can really produce some significant drama and would be an awesome story arc for any group to have one of the characters be redeemed like that. I mean, we know this is like the staple of a lot of sci-fi and fantasy fiction, the redemption arc, the redemption of Anakin Skywalker through Star Wars. It's awesome, you know, but seeing a, you know, someone who was a werewolf or a vampire or some sort of monstrous thing become human again, that's just a very interesting story. And so they give a good amount of space to this concept, which I think is absolutely not wasted space. That is a phenomenal system that they have built there. In addition, one of the cool sidebars in this chapter, which I am very much appreciative of, is an explanation of why the word apparatus can be either singular or plural and how it goes back to the Latin roots. And I just want to say thank you for putting that there. That is super helpful. It's like, what are you doing with the, how are you using the word apparatus as both singular and plural? It's breaking my brain, right? So anyway, they give a good explanation of that. I suppose I can accept their explanation. We'll just go ahead and say apparatus. Status can be either singular or plural. But anyway, I appreciated them having that in the chapter. And also, there's another cool thing about how the way that Gogs learn their gifts, not quite getting to the gifts yet, but just, you know, this idea of how do you learn gifts. And it has a section in there on how Magogs acquire theirs and how squires acquire theirs and how Gogs acquire theirs. And one of the interesting things about the way Gogs acquire theirs is that the sort of foolproof way to do it, and of course, you can research it on your own and all that kind of stuff. Design your own apparatus and then use this gift, and it's just the process of learning. But you can be taught the gift by a teacher. And what's cool is your character as a Gog can teach gifts to others. And I thought it was so cool that if you do that, you actually get a point of experience for teaching somebody else a gift, because they say in the chapter there, and this is so true, that when you teach somebody to do something, you learn more about that thing than you knew before. And as someone who has been a teacher my entire life, I have certainly noticed this, that when you've got to dig in and figure out, you know, what you're going to teach somebody on a certain topic, you become so much more involved in that subject and in that topic than you ever were before. And so I really appreciate this being actually ingrained in the mechanics of the game, that if you as a Gog teach another Gog one of these gifts, you actually earn a point of experience to help your character advance faster. What a sweet system. And it doesn't hurt anything mechanically, it doesn't unbalance anything, but it actually, you know, provides a real mechanical benefit to teaching. And I think that is super cool. But let's just get into some of these gifts here in this chapter. This is such a rich chapter. And actually, what I see happening here in the gifts chapter of Aether is that we're really getting almost like halfway to the absolute, like, banana pants crazy power levels of Aberrant. This Aether's sort of a halfway house between the Trinity Continuum core and the Aberrant super rules. I mean, it really is. And these mechanics don't have to just simply exist in 1890s. Now that we have the nuts and bolts to how to do all of this stuff, we can take some of these things and use them in other eras as well. You know, this whole system can become a bit of a, you know, a modular system to take a little bit here, take a little bit there. And so now we have like halfway to ultimate superpower type stuff available to us. And as you look through some of these gifts, you'll see what I mean. Again, there's some very interesting divisions here between like attribute gifts, all Magogs having access to these attribute gifts, whereas only some of the gifts are available to Gogs. And then sort of the same thing with skill gifts. They are all available to Gogs, but only some of them available to Magogs. And then there's like a really kind of cool system that they have, that if it's a skill gift that has the Gog keyword, it has to be utilized with an apparatus. And the same thing, some attribute gifts also are available to Gogs, but if a Gog uses one of those, if it has the keyword, they have to be able to use it through an apparatus. And it's kind of the same thing with the way Magogs work. Magogs get access to all of the attribute gifts, and they can use some of the skill gifts that have the Magog keyword. Some of the attribute gifts have the Magog keyword. If it has the Magog keyword, the Magog has to take a deviation, get a little bit farther away from humanity. Things like being allergic to sunlight or having some sort of compulsive behavior where if somebody throws a handful of rice down in front of you, you have to stop and count it. You know, these things that make these monstrous creatures like more deviated from humanity. And so if an attribute gift has the Magog keyword, the Magog can take it, but has to take one of these deviations. If it doesn't have the Magog keyword, a Magog can learn it without a deviation. If it has the Gog keyword, the Gog can learn and use it, but has to use an apparatus. If it's a skill gift and it does not have the Gog keyword, the Gog can learn it without needing an apparatus. But if it has the Gog keyword, then he has to use an apparatus. So it can be a little confusing at first when you say that all attribute gifts are available to Magogs, and all skill gifts are available to Gogs. But then there are these sort of different things that take place if it has these various keywords or not. But once you kind of get the hang of what it means by that, I don't think it's very difficult at all. But let's take a look at a couple of these, because I think they're very, very cool. First, right off the bat, the very first one, Accelerate Tempo. This thing is a... it is an attribute gift that is also available to Gogs, so they can use it with an apparatus. And this is just essentially the haste spell for the Trinity Continuum. It gives you the ability to perform extra actions without splitting dice pools. So you can perform one more action without dividing your dice pool up. So you want to shoot two things without having to, you know, roll and then take some successes, put it here, some successes, put it there, go for it. You know, it gives you like essentially an extra action around. Like I said, it's like a haste spell. So how cool is that, adding that to the Trinity Continuum? Also, there's one that's kind of early on in the attribute gifts called Edit Condition. Don't sleep on this one. I thought at first it was a little weak sauce, but then as you get into it, and especially as you look at the example that they provide there, what it does is it allows you to exchange one condition for something of kind of like an equal intensity but different. So the example that it gives is if something has blinded you and provides a +2 difficulty to your ability to see and act on things that you see, you can instead, if you're like a Gog, you can drink this sort of potion that's like your apparatus for this to switch the blindness out with like a bruised condition. You know, so you just take a -2 injury condition instead of the blindness. So that's actually extremely helpful. I mean, you just think of like what a toolbox that is to be able to switch one kind of condition for another. Something that relies on the ability to blind you or deafen you, for example, you can just immediately switch that off by switching it to a different sense, switching it to an injury condition, switching it to just any other condition. So don't sleep on that one. I think that one is actually very, very helpful. Just sort of a generally useful gift in almost every circumstance. There is something like a death ray called Expel Aether. It gives you some enhancement on an attack roll, but then also gives you the ability to impose some various stunts and things through extra successes. That one is very cool. Gravitic Redirect. Oh my goodness. You can just decide which direction gravity pulls you. You can walk on the ceiling. You can float upward. I mean, that thing is so useful. And you know, just thinking of all kinds of different devices that you would create as a Gog to be able to use that. I mean, of course, as a Magog, you use it innately. So if you're some sort of like, I don't know, gargoyle or something, and you just want to like quickly switch gravity so that you can walk on the ceiling, and you just sort of do that innately. But if you're a Gog and you have to use an apparatus, I mean, just the creativity of thinking of like, what is my apparatus going to be that causes gravity to reverse? Is it special boots that I wear? Is it some cool glove that I put on? Is it like a harness that I wear around my chest? And being able to choose all of that, you know, deciding how your apparatus looks and works to be able to accomplish these things, I think is one of the neatest parts of the game. It really opens up so many doors for creativity. Levitation. This is another awesome gift where it's essentially Mage Hand. And in every game where this effect occurs, I love it. I want it. Being able to just simply, you know, pick up an object and move it, pull it to yourself, move it around the room. That is ultimate cool. There's one called Paragon, which is actually a very, very involved, it's a long write-up on this gift. Don't skip over it because it's maybe one of the most useful ones in the entire game. It allows you to essentially increase scale on a number of different things. You know, you want to run fast, go for the Paragon of Dexterity. You know, you want to lift things, you know, Paragon of Might. But in addition to just increasing the scale, it also allows for new stunts to be used in accordance with that attribute that you have boosted up. And the choices there are really varied. There's a lot of different things that you can do. This just, it opens up a huge play space for thinking of, you know, Magog abilities especially. I mean, you can just come up with so many just in this one gift. And so be looking at that as like one of the primary things you want to do, especially if you're a Magog, but really for Gogs too, because, you know, all of your like super speed, super strength, all that kind of stuff is going to be found in that one Paragon gift. So make sure you take a look at that. Phantasm. Create Illusions. This is something that, you know, in Dungeons and Dragons, it's like a level one spell. There's ghost sound, there's like a minor illusion, something like that, you know, where you can just sort of create these things. And I always feel like it's never used as much as I would want it to. As I'm creating like a level one D&D or Pathfinder character, I'm always looking at that spell going, oh, this will be so cool. And I have all this stuff in my imagination of like, I'll use these illusions to distract people and whatnot. But because of the way that game is made, being essentially like a miniatures battle game, you know, where you walk into a room, there's goblins, and you just sort of fight the goblins. They're done in a few seconds, and then you move on to the next thing. And by the time you get to the bigger enemies, they don't care about your little level one illusions anymore. You essentially, even though you have all of these dreams for using illusions, you tend not to do it because those games are more miniatures battle games and less role-playing. And so in a game that is much more focused on the cinematic role-playing, I feel like a gift like Phantasm to be able to create these illusions would be way more useful. And especially because you have such a limited number of these gifts, if you pick Phantasm, you're really going to double down on that thing and use it as your, you know, Swiss Army knife to essentially try to solve every problem. And I think that is extremely cool. I would be picking up Phantasm immediately for like a lot of different character types. Super spatial locomotion. What the crap? It's essentially like Dimension Door in Pathfinder D&D, but in a game like this, it's so cool. You see a place and you just sort of like, you know, you warp over to it, come out the other side, whether it's a, you know, through a Magog intuitive nature to be able to just kind of like rip through the reality like that, or you're using some kind of cool pocket watch sort of device to like open up a little portal and zap you through. I think that is super cool, super useful. And by the way, of all the three types of characters here in Aether, you know, your squires, your gogs, your magogs, I mean, squires are cool. You want to tell a human story? You know, they're essentially like the talents from the Trinity Core. They, you know, have all these cool luck things. And there's a lot of stuff there that's very cool. I really appreciate the way that they have taken the time to kind of rethink some of the core gifts and tool them to like the 1890s time period. That's very cool. And there's definitely just like a massive toolbox there if you want to play like the normal human character, and adding in some of the neat edges and whatnot from Aether allows you to tell a very cool story. I mean, you could play Sherlock Holmes all day and it would be a lot of fun. Magogs, certainly very cool. You want to be a vampire, want to be a werewolf, want to be a crazy Frankenstein monster thing. It's awesome. And it's definitely great fuel for enemies and antagonists to be able to use the Magogs. But even if you were just telling a Magog story, a vampire story, a werewolf story, I think it could be a lot of fun. But let me tell you, the Gogs are where this particular game is at. They are cool beyond belief. The ability to make all these devices, to do all these things, I feel like this is where I want to play like 95% of the time when playing in an Aether game. I want to be a Gog. I want to have all my cool apparatus, and I want to go nuts with these cool gifts. So that's just a little aside there. I was just kind of like, you know, my mind was spinning out of control thinking about all the cool Gog stuff that I would do. Thermal mastery. Here's another gift for you. Thermal mastery. You want to be able to freeze things, set things on fire, blow things up. It allows you to have attacks, like essentially like weapon attacks that are either cold-based or fire-based, and you can use you can create new tags for those things to incinerate and burn things or freeze things and slow them down and stun them if it's cold, you know, because you're kind of, you know, stopping them dead in their tracks. Very, very cool power. I can imagine making an awesome freeze ray or flamethrower, or just a cool Gog that has like breath abilities and stuff. No end to the coolness with thermal mastery. Etheric weapon, I mean, this is super cool. I talked about the Expel Aether Death Ray thing earlier, but Etheric Weapon just essentially, you know, allows you to use the Aether as your weapon, create different weapon tags for it. It's phenomenal. It's, again, just a giant toolbox for the imagination. This, I feel like almost any Gog is going to have Etheric Weapon, and they're going to create some very cool stuff there. The possibilities are limitless with this thing. Is it a little pistol you have in your purse? Is it like a giant rifle? Is it a cane, like a sword cane, but instead of a sword, it's like a, you know, plasma torch or something? Is it a hairpin that you pull out and when you fling it, this is what I'm saying. Like, using your imagination to take these gifts and spin them in the direction you want, I think is ultra cool. Into the middle of next week, you can literally punch somebody several combat rounds into the future. They disappear from your timeline and reappear in the future. What? Right? So that one's cool. Invisibility. I mean, come on. Everybody wants to be invisible, right? So that one I thought was a standout. And transformation, one of the other ones I thought was a real standout one. Of course, this goes to the Jekyll and Hyde and being able to, like, literally physically transform from one thing into another. Of course, the Jekyll and Hyde is the main example there, but there are so many other things I think that you could imagine and do. With that power, it really just opens up Pandora's box and lets you go nuts. So these are some of the things that were just stand out to me reading through the chapter. All of it is very cool. All the powers, kind of like with Aberrant, all of the powers are so broad that each one of them, you know, you could make like 100 different sorts of things out of it. You know, and this is what's so cool. You know, you might look at a list and you say, oh, well, there's like what, 40 gifts, 50 gifts, I don't know, something like that. A few dozen. You look at that and you think, oh, well, you know, in my Exalted book, we've got like 700 different charms or whatever. Yes, but these are much more broad and they allow you to use your creativity to tailor it perfectly to your individual character. And that is what is so cool about it. That's what just makes this system so good, is being able to tweak it. And each one of these powers, like, they provide all these different ways that you can, you know, use two successes to purchase this stunt and three successes to purchase that stunt. Or you can add a tag by using these things, add a weapon tag. So all of that stuff is like customization of a broad ranged power that allows for some extremely varied expression of each one of the abilities. So I think that that is ultra cool. That essentially, I mean, so what we've been given here, I mean, very similar to the Aberrant rules, we've been given a tool set that can just about produce every effect that you have seen in Victorian literature and many that you haven't seen there. You know, you can produce almost any effect that you have seen in monster movies for vampires and werewolves and Frankensteins and zombies and whatnot. You can produce like almost any effect that you have seen there with no trouble. So, I mean, this is an exhaustive toolbox. It really is. I don't really see anything missing. So, man, once again, kudos to the developers on this. I feel like Aether is such a good product, and seeing how they have begun to kind of clean up some of the questionable areas in the Trinity Continuum core, which would often talk about things like adding complications to roles, but wouldn't give specifics on exactly how that works. And here in this chapter, we have a list of if some gift in the core or whatnot says that it creates a complication, here is a giant list of complications that you can choose from that, you know, would maybe fit that thematically. And that kind of thing, I think, is so cool. It really shows Aether is, this is no fly-by-night, let's just get out a Victorian setting thing for Trinity. This is a major expansion for Trinity that provides a humongous amount of new play space, clarifies old play space, and I mean, I just think this is incredible. I have not actually read through the adventure manuscript preview yet. I have it because I backed it through the backer kit, but I haven't actually read through it. I'm wondering if the Aether stuff here is actually clarifying some of the directions that adventure could take as well. So I just feel like this is such a cool book, and I can't stop raving about it, as you can tell. But it looks like the light on line one is blinking. We have a caller. Let's go to that caller now. Thanks for calling Trinity Continuum Airwaves. Go ahead.
I'm calling in about your frankly dangerous Aether show. Mr. Edison makes it clear that an open discussion of Aether puts the very safety of humanity at risk. Be warned, within a week, you, your show, and this game will be unwound.
Hey, now listen, tell Mr. Edison, I'm one of his actual fans. I'm one of the ones who appreciates all of his inventiveness and whatnot. I defended him when people said that he just was always out for money and he just wanted to put a price tag on everything. No, you know what? You know what? We will not be silenced by this kind of thing, okay? We will continue to put our pirate signal out there, and we'll... Okay, listen. If you want to get in touch with us, make sure to call the number 678-369-3214. Don't let them silence us. We will not go quietly into this night. Listen, I don't have much time, but if you want to send us an email, send it to trinitycontinuumairwaves@gmail.com. We'll make sure to put you on the show. I really hope I'll be able to see you guys in the next one.